Hello, everybody, and welcome to RFB Radio. I'm Kel Fritzy. I trust you're doing okay today. We're getting thunderstorms here, so if you hear some very loud noises in the background, that is what you'll be hearing. Anyway, got a lot to get through today. Wow. Got a couple of audio clips for you as well. Well, first of all, let me give you a preamble as to what we're up to today. I want to talk about these sugar shacks in the province of Quebec in Canada. And I have a great article I'm going to relate to you from the Simple Facts of Life website. Let me see. I'm going to talk about this Home Depot business. People wanting to boycott it, are boycotting it. Give me strength. All right. Anyway, oh yeah, there's a little hair on in Denmark. Wow, this young lady is quite the something. And I do have an update on Tommy Robinson. Let me bring up that page for you. Now, this is Justin, and this is what I have. Let me go to the top here. Okay. So it's Justin. Tommy Robinson gets 9 months in jail for filming Muslim defendants convicted in a pedophile rape gang trial and live streaming it to Facebook. So the nine-month jail sentence includes 6 months for filming outside Leeds Crown Court last year and 3 months for an incident at Canterbury Crown Court the year before. After deduction of 4 time served in prison last year for the same offense, the sentence in practice amounts to 19 weeks, and he will probably be released on probation after 10 weeks. So he was sentenced to 9 months. He may be out in 10 weeks for a time served on a previous conviction in which he served time. He seemed to be in high spirits when he left. We didn't see him when the sentence was handed down in the courtroom. He seemed to be in high spirits. He was flashing the victory sign, and he was smiling. So where do we go from here now? Well, the former English Defense League founder was found in contempt in 3 respects when he filmed men, Quranimals, accused of the sexual exploitation of young girls in breach of a reporting ban outside Leeds Crown Court in May of 2018. As he was led to the cells at the Old Bailey, Robinson winked at the public gallery and put his fingers up in a V sign for victory. Robinson's barrister, Richard Furlong, raised the possibility of an appeal against the court's decision on contempt and was told he has 28 days from today. And today is June 11th, 2019. So he has 28 days to apply for his appeal. And you can imagine what was going on outside. you guessed it. The Tommy Robinson supporters were not happy at all. So I certainly can't blame them. And, this is insanity. This sentence should have never come down in the first place. It should have been a done deal. But let me see if I can bring up the audio for the crowds. I had to refresh the page. And here we are. So I'll just turn up my speaker here and, take a listen.
Shut up,
there you go. There's an idea as to what was going on outside the courthouse at the Old Bailey. That's pretty bad, though. Really unhappy with the turnout of this. But I don't know where he's going to be sent, what prison he'll be housed in. No idea on that yet. But like I say, for the most part, that's what I have. This is breaking news, and he received a 9-month prison sentence. He might be released within 10 weeks, though. Now, I have a few little stories here I want to share with you before I get into the stories. I was listening to Sanity for Sweden, and he was talking about a Danish girl, 15 years old, and she was coming home from school, and three young males on their mopeds. I would assume they're either mopeds or they're the crotch mobiles. Anyway, they approached her and they blocked her way. And she asked them to move, and they would not move. She was trying to get around them. They kept blocking her way. One of the males got off his bike and approached her and started unbuttoning the front of her jacket and her shirt, and was placing his hands on her breasts. And the two other males were still on their bikes. She realized that she was in a great deal of trouble. I think that she was in a fairly isolated area, and she knew that this was going to turn into a sexual assault. So, well, she had something up her sleeve to help her out, and that would be her martial arts training. Apparently, she's got a black belt in karate. And she let all three of them have it. Yeah, she drop-kicked the first male who was fondling her, knocked him out cold. The second one approached. She karate-chopped him. He went down like a sack of potatoes. And the third one, he was hurt as well. And she got on her bike, and she went to the police station, and they were arrested. And remember, this happened in Denmark. They were not those tall, blonde dudes. No. They were migrants. Yep. She said that they had darker skin, black hair. And they spoke of broken Danish. So, there you go. That happened this week in Denmark. So, I suppose what I want to tell you guys, if you do have daughters, maybe it's and sons, maybe it's not such a bad idea to enroll your children in self-defense courses. I have a friend named Joe. He has two sons. They're twins. They're both 10. Well, yeah, I guess they'd both be the same age if they're twins. And they are taking martial arts right now, and they're moving quite a ways up in their belts. So that's just one idea that the parents out there can think about. That Danish girl, smart parents. Pardon me. For enrolling her in those courses, self-defense courses. These migrants are quite brutal. And like they just hate everything. They really do. There's a less fortunate story that comes out of Norway from this week. And this older woman was out, and she was walking her dog, a little dog. And a guy approached her, once again, a migrant. Didn't speak Norwegian. Darker skin, black hair, a big beard. And he robbed her. She handed it over, and that should have been the end of it, but it wasn't. He decided that he was going to kill her dog, and he did. He stomped on the poor dog's head and broke its neck. And this dog was a Chihuahua, just a tiny, tiny little lap dog. It's bad enough that he robbed this older woman, but he had to kill her companion. Now, when they tell you that they're going to kill your animals, believe them. When they tell you they're going to kill your dog, if they tell you that, believe them. If they tell you they're going to kill you, believe them. So these are just... That's a horrific story, and I almost feel bad in relating that, but this is what's happening in Europe. These are stories that never will ever find their way to North America. But I have a bit of good news out of Italy. Interior Minister Matteo Salvini is going right ahead, full steam. Yep, he just shut down Italy's largest detention center for migrants. This detention center, it was an old army base, and so it was acting as a detention center. Salvini shut it down, and he's getting rid of the migrants. He's putting them on boats back to North Africa. So this guy is really going to town. So Matteo Salvini, wow. Keep an eye out for him. He's doing great things. So that's good news. After that poor dog story, I figured I better give you guys something. And there you go, I'm back. Can you let me know if you can hear me now? Apparently I had no sound for 30 minutes. And the last anybody heard was when I was relating some stories out of Europe, and the last they heard was my discussing incidences involving a brave Danish 15-year-old girl and an older woman who was... robbed in Norway, and her dog was killed by the car animal. Yeah, this brave Danish girl surrounded by three car animals, the three migrants, and she managed to fight them off because she has a black belt in karate. But yeah, they're absolute car animals. So I'm assuming that nobody heard the story regarding the sugar shack either. So I'm going to go over that. If it's a repeat and I need to edit the first portion of the show out, I will. But I do want to talk with you about the sugar shacks and what's happening. And that, you know, Quebec is a very unique province in that it really does have a very rich culture. And part of that culture is the sugar shack. Now, sugar shacks are where the sap of the maple tree is boiled and made into maple syrup. Most sugar shacks in Quebec are only open during the sugaring off season, which is normally the spring. many families traditionally spend their Easter dinner get-togethers at the Sugar Shack, eating traditional Quebec food and lots of maple, with lots of maple sugar. Now, the food is amazing, people. The food, wow. And the quantity is amazing. There are things there that I bet you've never heard of, things like Christ ears, and that's some sort of a fried pork thing. I haven't tried that yet, but I imagine it's good. The homemade bread, the pea soup, the meat pies, and of course all of those sugary treats. Pea soup, oh, Quebec pea soup. If you've never had pea soup out of the province of Quebec, with the pork, oh, it is to absolutely die for. Hey, G, Sugar Shack, yeah. I was going to load that song by Jimmy Gilmer and the Fireballs. You know that, Chief? So this is a tradition that has been going on for eons and eons in the province of Quebec. And now it is once again being messed about with by, you guessed it, the Galloping Muslims. Now, as I've talked about in the past, there's always been a debate about, you know, accommodating religious minorities in Quebec. And this business with the Sugar Shacks and the Muslims, it's been going on for years. They're messing with the Sugar Shacks. Now, the publication, the Journal de Montreal tabloid on Monday, dedicated its front page to expose a pair of Sugar Shacks where in South Montreal. It took the efforts to allow Muslims to enjoy the annual spring maple syrup tradition known as sugaring off, right? One Sugar Shack, or a cabane, Sucre, removed pork from some of its food to meet the dietary requirements under Islam. Yeah, so they removed pork from some of its foods. Oh my God, do you believe that? Did they go near the pea soup? Yeah, I think they did. Oh, pea soup without ham, one headline stated in Le Journal. Yeah, so they took the ham, the pork, out of the pea soup to accommodate the Muslims. Another Sugar Shack paused entertainment to allow about 20 Muslims to pray on the empty dance floor. This incident took place in 2012. I just want to let you know that. But it's been happening since. And some patrons and a performer at one of the Sugar Shacks voiced their concerns. I think it's not the place to do it. Country singer Sylvain Boily, who was forced to pause for 10 minutes during his afternoon show, told CTV Montreal, Muslims have to accept the way in Quebecois and how we have our fun. Luc Gladeau, the co-owner of a sugar shack, it's called, this is hard to pronounce, Les Arablir au Sous-Bois, said he did what he could to accommodate the Muslim group and said he was surprised to see the prayers making news. They wanted to make a prayer. If the dance room was full of people and everybody was dancing, we wouldn't stop. But nobody was dancing. 10 minutes in the cabane or sugar shack. It's not long. Way to go, Luke. Luke isn't clued up, I guess. Luke has never heard that parable about the camel in the tent. Oh, maybe Well, it's 2019. Maybe Luke has by now. They wanted to make a prayer. If the dance room will be full and everybody is dancing, we wouldn't stop it, he says. But nobody was dancing. 10 minutes in the sugar shack. It's not long. Good old Luke. Way to go, Luke Glado. But these allowances have sparked some debate in the province. Hermaine Bordeaux-Clermont, a spokesperson for the Association of Sugar Shacks, called it unreasonable to accommodate people who want to pray in sugar shacks. Glado said he was disappointed in the reaction and that in the future he would allow Muslims to pray in a private room. The debate on accommodating religious minorities in Quebec continues on other fronts. So that's what's going on in Quebec right now. And the reason why I wanted to bring this to your attention is because I was listening to a YouTube host by the name of Julie Mora. Julie Mora is a French-Canadian. She lives in the province of Quebec, and she's seeing this about her. Julie Mora is also well-versed in Islam, and she speaks about it quite often on her channel. And when she brought it up this week and was talking about yet another sugar shack going down for the count in terms of accommodating these Muslim Islamic demands, well, I started to see red. Like, you have to understand, this is the province of Quebec. Quebec doesn't mess around with people interfering with their traditions, but we're also dealing with Muslims. Yeah. Just popping in to make sure people can still hear me. Sorry about those 30 minutes. Anyway. There have been other incidences in Quebec. There is a YMCA. It removed the frosted glass and it installed to protect the innocent eyes of young Orthodox Jews from spandex-clad exercisers. Oh, young Orthodox Jews, all those horny little boys. So they replaced the glass, the frosted glass windows, right, with clear windows, and they have blinds now instead. They can be open and closed at the request of the YMCA members, and it restores the view from the exercise room to what it was before the frosted glass was installed. Some Y members have also complained about people peeping in on them when the windows didn't have frosted glass. Yeah, you're teenage boys. And they're Orthodox Jews. Of course they're going to be peeking in. Yeah, I guess the rabbi didn't take kindly to it. You know, I wonder what the rabbi said to his students, like, get over here. Knock it off. Oh, goodness. So, I find the YMCA, I mean, it's not really funny because, you know, it's just another example of accommodating a minority group. But just the image of these teenage boys peeking in and watching all the pretty girls work out and the rabbi coming after them. Anywho, so that's what's going on with these sugar shacks in the province of Quebec. I think it's quite disgusting. And we're seeing this right across the board. And I am going to explain that to you. I have a wonderful article here from the Simple Facts of Life website. Please check it out. It is fantastic. The link is right there in the show notes. Copy and paste it to another page. It'll take you right there. I thought it was so well written, I had to share it with you. So if you go to qmcusn.wordpress.com, that will take you to Simple Facts of Life, Personal Liberty, Personal Responsibility, and Personal Accountability. Now, I love this. A chief he has here. Obligatory PC disclaimer. I guess we have to do that more and more these days, don't we? Yeah. Anyway. Nothing in this post should be construed as an attempt to cast aspersions on any individuals on the basis of race, religion, ethnicity, national origin, gender identification, blah, 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 or blah. There, that was enough to allow me to keep my head attached. Probably not, but my head has been pretty useless for quite a while now, so what the heck? You should listen to him on his own radio program Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So here is his article. Okay, let's talk about Islam. You know, the religion of peace, or something like that. Never mind that the Arabic word for peace is actually salam, and Islam means submission. We'll just go with the flow here. I'm not one to quibble over what anybody wants to say about their faith or how they perceive the deity. I mean, it's not like anyone would shout God is great whilst performing some of the least peaceful acts imaginable. Oh, wait. Now, the question here, we have questions here. The questions here are, should Islam even be considered to be a legitimate religion, deserving First Amendment protection at all? And if it's not, then what is it? Let's attempt to look for rational answers to these questions. First off, Islam does have a lot in common with other major Western religions. Plenty of talk about God, the hereafter, and how to make it all work for you. All religions have a set of tenets that adherents are expected to believe in, and a set of rules that believers must follow in order to remain in the good graces of the religion. Also, there are unpleasant consequences for those who break the rules. So far, so good. However, there is one thing that must be kept in mind. Simple Facts of Life. Number one, adherence to the rules of any religion is a voluntary personal choice. If a person violates the rules of any religion, then that religion has the right to impose sanctions on the violator, provided that two conditions are met. The violator is a member of that faith group. And two, the member willingly accepts the sanctions imposed. For instance, if a man is a member of the Roman Catholic Church, he will periodically go to confession and confess his sins to the priest, who, according to the teachings of the Church, is empowered to grant absolution. As a condition of absolution, the priest may assign a penance, such as, say, 5 Hail Marys, or something like that. If the penitent wishes to remain in the good graces of the Church, he will follow the priest's instructions. If not, well, that's his choice. He can explain it to Jesus when the time comes. Islam provides some more extreme examples of this principle. Say, for instance, that a man is caught stealing, and the religious judge says that his hand must be cut off. Personally, I'd rather do the Hail Mary thing. But if the thief believes that it's worth losing a hand to save his soul, well, that's his choice. The principle is the same. I have no problem with it. I'm sure that Allah will be pleased as well. There is only one sanction that any religion can impose on a person who does wish to accept it. That is that the religious organization may exclude that person from the group. Call it excommunication, shunning, voted off the island, or whatever. No association of people should be required to accommodate those whose actions are contrary to the goals of the group. Follow the rules or get the boot. Again, I have no problem with this. What I do have a problem with is the fact that Islam often seeks to impose its rules and punishments on people who are not voluntarily willing to accept them. This clearly violates the conditions mentioned above. Perhaps the most blatant example of this is, according to Islam, the punishment for leaving the faith, and that is death. It should be clear to anyone with a functional brain cell that the person who decides that he no longer wishes to be a Muslim is no longer willing to accept any sanctions that Islam might place upon him, and therefore, Islam has no legitimate right to punish him. Since Islam insists that it does have that right, then obviously it is not an actual religion. So, if Islam is not a legitimate religion, then what is it? Simple facts of life number two. There are only two types of organizations that are able to impose their rules and punishments on those who do not willingly accept them. If you want to get along in the world, you have to follow the rules that exist in the place where you are. Simple facts of life number 2A. The first of these organizations is government. Government makes rules, lots of rules. In my humble opinion, too many rules. And governments set up systems to deal with, sometimes very harshly, those who do not follow the rules. This, of course, is necessary to protect the vast majority of the population who generally obey the rules, at least the big ones, from those who would prey upon them by breaking the law. Since government is based on geographic jurisdictions, and since norms and customs are different in various parts of the world, the laws will vary from place to place. As many cultures are based around the religious traditions of a particular locality, it is not unusual to find that civil law closely mirrors religious rule. In the United States, our laws, or at least they used to be, generally were based on Judeo-Christian ethics. However, despite any similarities, religious rules and civic laws are two completely separate things. As Jesus admonished, render unto Caesar. If you break a religious rule, you can only be involuntarily punished if and only because it is also a violation of civil law. That's the way the government works around here. Now keep that in mind, people. That's a really important point. That was me talking. Back to the article. In some Islamic countries, the situation is a bit more muddled. The religious rules are specifically enshrined as part of the civil law. In fact, in Iran, the civil government is, I believe, legally subservient to the religious hierarchy. The president works for the Ayatollah. So in places like that, anyone who is within the geographic jurisdiction of that country is required to obey the rules of Islam. Not the kind of place that I would like to live in, but since I don't, I really have no problems with those laws. Should I ever have the occasion to visit one of those lands, I will be sure to at least put on the appearance of following the local laws. If you happen to live in a country like that and do have a problem with the way things are done there, then you need to change the government or just leave. If neither of these is an option, well, sorry. But in the United States, there is a clear separation between religious and civil law. Islamic rules cannot be enforced on anybody who does not voluntarily accept such enforcement. Islam is not the government. And yet, many Islamists try to impose their rules on the population at large. So since Islam is not a religion, and it's not the government, yet it tries to involuntarily impose its rules, then what is it? Simple Facts of Life number 2B. The second type of outfit that imposes its rules on those who do not willingly accept them is organized crime. Criminal gangs, be they the Mafia, Bloods, Crips, MS-13, Yakuza, or whatever, impose their rules on everybody that happens to be within any areas they are under, that is under their control. They do this by intimidation, threats, and violence. They require people to do business with their organizations. They impose quote-unquote taxes by forcing the folks to pay for quote-unquote protection. They punish those who do not follow their rules. They flout the authority of the government by means of subversion, infiltration, and by employing a host of advocates and lawyers to legitimize their scheme. One common tactic used, since many gangs are based around a specific ethnicity, is to claim discrimination and therefore victimhood, as if the only reason that you could be opposed to their activity is that you are a bigot, racist, or some kind of phobe. Right, they're not criminals, they're just misunderstood. Anybody buying that? I didn't think so. The gangs described in the last paragraph appear to have a lot in common with the Islamic groups that we see today. They control certain districts and force everyone there to conform to their rules. They put their people into new areas of the country in order to expand their power. While no-go zones seem to be more of a European phenomenon, there are hints of this sort of thing in America. They use violence and terror to impose their will. They are placing their members and supporters in government offices. And if you dare to object to what they are doing, the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, will be all over the media and all over the courts to label you as some kind of Islamophobic bigot. Just like the Mafia, Consigliere. This playbook could have been plagiarized from the Godfather. Vito Corleone would be proud. So now that we know what the Islamist organizations are, what can be done about them? Simple Facts of Life number 3. The United States government knows how to deal with organized crime. The feds have the knowledge. They have the tools. The only thing they seem to lack is the will. I contend that the government should use the RICO, Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act, laws to go after the Islamists. They should be investigated. They should be prosecuted. Their leaders should be imprisoned. Their assets should be seized. They should be treated as if they are a crime syndicate, and certainly not as a First Amendment protected religious organization. Now, excuse me, while I look for a place to store my soon-to-be severed head. And that was written by Chief of Simple Facts of Life via his website, qmcusn.wordpress.com, and the link is right there in the show notes. So, Chief, I want to give you a huge round of applause for that. That was just brilliant. And thank you for allowing me to share it. And I see that Gary got here. Now, where am I here? Seeing as I pretty much had to start the show practically over again. Yeah, I want to talk about this boycotting a Home Depot business. But I'm going to take a quick break. You'll see that I'm very, very sick of the whiners out there. They're quite frankly pissing me off. And some of these stories that have been coming out lately is driving me nuts. We have people in coffee shops uncomfortable with police officers. We have women upset about construction signs. I got two clips I want to share with you. I'm going to share this first one, though, from Blue Collar Logic. And in particular, they are discussing what happened at this Starbucks in the United States with this fragile customer and five police officers who were having coffee in the same Starbucks.
6 police officers were asked to leave a Starbucks in Tempe, Arizona. Why? Because a customer said that seeing the cops made them feel uncomfortable. Really? The barista was polite and Starbucks has apologized, but the reason this incident is worth mentioning goes to the state of mind of that Starbucks employee. How do we get to a place where a young person would risk offending 6 public servants in order to coddle a single customer? After all, the 6 police officers were customers too. In a healthy society, that barista would have said, "You're uncomfortable? I'm sorry to hear that, but the door is right there." And then get back to making double ristretto venti half soy non-fat decaf organic chocolate frappuccinos, or whatever people order at that kind of place. We have so allowed a victim mentality to take hold in our society that the Starbucks employee probably never even thought about it. This person feels uncomfortable, so these police officers have to go. This sort of pandering to weakness is a contagion spreading through society like a virus in a poorly written B-movie. People are not only getting weaker by the minute, but now normal people are rushing to enable them. We're actively training people to search for reasons to be offended. Colin Kaepernick arbitrarily decided that the same flag Barack Obama waved at his inauguration is suddenly a symbol of slavery, and a giant sportswear corporation caved immediately. A mural in San Francisco was painted over because it showed a historical scene with black workers loading a wagon. Presumably the workers were slaves, and therefore the artwork must never be seen again, lest somebody be made uncomfortable. Amazon removed a book from its virtual bookshelves because it offers a non-coercive therapy that some say can convert a gay person to normal sexuality. There are examples of this nonsense happening every day. Now, you do realize that Amazon is happy to sell Mao's Little Red Book, and they're okay with selling Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto. And they have no issue with selling Hitler's Mein Kampf, the blueprint for the Holocaust. But a book by an obscure psychologist must be struck from the platform because some gay person might get offended. Well, whatever happened to letting people just be offended? Why do the rest of us have to spring into action? Why are their feelings the responsibility of everyone else but themselves? The supposedly uncomfortable customer in Tempe was just pulling the victim card in order to embarrass those cops. That person is just a cry bully looking to score some cheap points. Remember the last time Starbucks had an incident with the police in one of their stores? The 2 black guys in Philadelphia who refused to buy something and then refused to leave? The police were called and the men still refused to leave and they were eventually taken out in handcuffs? The city paid those men off for having been made to feel uncomfortable with the result of their own actions. Starbucks closed 8,000 stores for a day in order to have a special training. Was the training about how to get rid of people who try to use the store without buying anything? No, it was to instruct employees to let people squat for as long as they like. But I bet after this recent incident, they don't close down stores to teach baristas to respect the police, who are there to serve and protect. I'm guessing that no training will be given about how to ignore a crybaby customer either. And few people will demand that Starbucks or Amazon or the San Francisco School Board stand up to people who try to bully others with a display of anxiety or outrage. Last week, we saw a salute to our armed forces. The president took us on a historical journey through the challenges of our past. Nowhere did we hear about how U.S. soldiers cowered in fear, or ran away, or were just too upset to do their duty. We would literally not be here if the people who built this country hadn't sucked it up and gone forward when they had every reason to be frightened. And I'm afraid that if we keep disrupting everyday activities in order to coddle the weak, we'll eventually lose the very thing that has made this country so great. And that's the simple truth. Thanks for watching. If you like this video, subscribe to our channel, and if you want to become a supporting member of Blue Collar Logic, click on the link in the description and give what you can.
And so there you go. Now, yeah, I was talking about, Vorp is saying snowflakes in Arizona. We will find them everywhere, Vorp will bite. Do not worry about that. But this story regarding Home Depot, it's driving me absolutely crazy, okay? Okay, there was a really stupid person. Really stupid. But because of her stupidity, people are boycotting Home Depot because of this anti-Trump attack. She wore a damn hat. If you go up and take a look at the picture slides, I've got a picture of her. She's rather cute, actually. She's young. Well, she's in college. Uh-oh. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. So this employee is causing an uproar, right, that has so many calling for a boycott of Home Depot. And she did it by just wearing a simple hat. Yeah, and I agree. It's a hat. The New York Daily News talked to the employee about what happened when she wore her anti-Trump hat. A Staten Island, New York Home Depot worker said she is receiving death threats after wearing an anti-Trump hat to work. Crystal Lake is 22. She wore the controversial hat during her shift on May 15th. This is what Staten Island Live reported. The hat reads, "America was never great." It's a white cap, too. Lake said the message was inspired by Donald Trump's presidential campaign slogan, "Make America Great Again." The point of the hat was to say America needs changing and improvement. I don't think it's a positive message to say. Let's look at the past. Well, I'll give her points for that. A photo of Lake wearing that hat was shared on social media and quickly went viral. She woke up to several messages on May 18th from family and friends urging her to check her social media accounts. "Everyone kept asking me if I was on Facebook or Twitter, which I hadn't been," she recalled. "And then I saw how many people were sharing the picture and that it was going viral. I was honestly shocked. I didn't expect this to happen." Yeah, you're dumb, Crystal Lake. "But you're allowed to be dumb in a free and great country like America." Yep, she's a college student. So, you know, we can imagine where she got her foolish notions of America from. And like I say, I'd take a look up, and there she is holding the hat for the camera now. Like I say, she's young, she's pretty, but she's stupid as a bag of hammers. Home Depot, hammers. Kel made a funny. Well, you know, come on, cheer up, you miserable liberal. You know, things don't always have to be that depressing. But she is getting a lot of outraged responses, and she says she was getting death threats or racial epithets, but the author of this article couldn't find them. But one tweet said, "My father opened the first Florida Home Depot store and was a vet. He is rolling in his grave because of Crystal Lake." Look, it's a free country, and you should be allowed to wear whatever hat you want. But if it does seem like anti-American sentiments, like the one she wears, are allowed in public spaces and pro-American stances are shunned. Home Depot said she should not have been allowed to wear it, but she says she'll continue to wear it to work. So after all of this, she's still going to wear the damn hat. Either way, no one should be tossing, you know, racial, you know, slurs or death threats, you know, at this young and dumb lady. Because it is a free country. And you have the right to be stupid and wear it proudly. Here's the last time Trump called for a boycott of a company. Will he call for a boycott of Home Depot? What do you think? Should Crystal Lake be allowed to showcase her anti-American idiocy? It's a young, stupid 22-year-old college student. It was an incident that took place in one Home Depot in Staten Island, New York. Okay? That's it. It's not like there was a nationwide campaign where all the employees showed up wearing this particular hat. It was just one employee who decided that she liked the hat and she was going to wear it and she's going to make a statement. Yeah, it's kind of dumb because, of course, she knew what reaction she was going to get, but I don't think she realized just how big the reaction would be. Now, my question to you, are you going to boycott a Home Depot because of the stupidity of one individual? Like, really? If so, really? Why? It's like that, rather overpriced online shopping department store, Wayfair, when they were contracted to provide beds at the detention centers there at the border. Oh, I'm boycotting Wayfair. Why? Wayfair is making money, and making money means money for their employees. Making money, it's called capitalism. But anyway, back to this really, really silly little girl and her stupid little cap. Big deal. Just go to Home Depot. If you like the Home Depot, you like the product and the prices are reasonable and their product has always stood the test of time in your home, like, just go to the damn outlet wherever you are and shop. Don't fall into these stupid traps. They're unnecessary. They're stupid. It's the same with everybody's getting in an uproar about Ariel, the mermaid. Yeah, the little mermaid. The little mermaid is now black. Like, okay, now we know that black people tend not to be from Copenhagen and and have red hair. Okay, and they don't have fishtails, but everybody's getting upset about Ariel now being black. Personally, I really don't care, because we know what they're doing. They're just envelope pushing. That's what they're up to. Ignore them, and it goes. You know, they'll go away. They'll get tired of these antics. Sooner or later, if you want to boycott, you know, not see, you know, what, you know, okay. If you don't like the premise of this remake of The Little Mermaid, just don't go to the theater. Protest with your pocket, your wallet, in your pocket. Protest with your money. But don't stand outside with the stupid placards and, little Ariel, she's supposed to be a white redhead. Actually, maybe I should take a personal umbrage to all of this, because they are kind of after the gingerheads. Holy jeez. They went after Little Orphan Annie a few years ago. I think it was in New York, the theater production they put on, and Little Orphan Annie, who's a redhead, was replaced by a black girl. So they really have it in for the redheads. There is another movie. I think it's Beauty and the Beast. I don't know. I don't keep track of these movies. Maybe I'm wrong about it being Beauty and the Beast, but all the same. It seemed Walt Disney sure liked to cast their animated characters, the female characters, as being redheads. And they're all being wiped out for black characters. But, okay. I won't take personal umbrage as a redhead. Just don't watch the damn movie. Don't take your kids to it. Rent the original movie. Watch it with your kids or your grandkids or whatever. But I'm beginning to think that these protests are really proving to be quite useless. It's nothing more than an agitation fest. And you bring out the worst in people from the other side, meaning Antifa. If you're going to burn your energy, get out there and celebrate your country. You know, 4th of July, Independence Day, like, wow. All those celebrations going on, and you know, the parades. It was fantastic to watch that footage. I really enjoyed that, and people were happy and having a good time. Like, celebrate. Don't protest over stupid shit. Okay? But I'm getting ready to wind down the show, seeing as I have lost 30 minutes because it turned out it was my phone decided to do something very strange. So, sorry about that. But I have another clip I want to share with you here. And this is more or less a staying along the lines of the whingers and the whiners and the little snowflakes that, yes, Forb, can be found in Arizona as well. This one is ridiculous. Oh, this one is kind of like a twofold presentation. The first part deals with a snowflake. Get this. She's a sociology professor. Enough said. And she has a complaint. Oh, she had a complaint about a men working site. At a construction site, yeah. Where are all the women? You don't have any women working. And what they're doing to our men, they're emasculating our men, offering these stupid courses on how to, what's the word I'm looking for? How to subdue your toxic masculinity. It's just bullshit. This is all college stuff. College is a waste of time. Don't send your kids to college unless they want to become doctors, lawyers, or engineers. Encourage them into the trades, electricians and plumbers and welders, things like that. If you have kids and they're in grade 11 or 12 and they come to you and they say, well, I want to go to this university. Well, what are you going to study? Well, I was thinking of majoring in sociology. Don't even write a check. I'm serious. Don't write a check. Because these MRS degrees are just insanely useless. But I'm going to play this clip by Voltaire. He sums it up pretty good. Like I say, this is twofold. First, dealing with that sociology professor and her being triggered by a sign, and how you men can curtail your toxic masculinity.
So we really do live in a world now where absolutely everything you say can be perceived as triggering, or you hurt somebody's feelings, or what you're saying is offensive, right? Heaven forbid we say anything offensive. But of course it's ridiculous. You know, people are acting like babies, people are triggered at the drop of a hat. And one of the best examples of this was a video that I did a few weeks ago, or a few months ago now rather, where I talked about a professor by the name of Caitlin Collins that was triggered by a men working sign. Now, we've all seen these signs in public at construction sites. All it says is men working. It's just a notice to tell the public when you're driving by, be careful, be cautious, keep a lookout. There are workers at this site. And it's a very generic sign. I'm sure we all have it in our cities wherever you may be. But this professor took it upon herself to call that sign out and say that this is sexist. And she actually stopped in the middle of the construction site and said, hey, wait a second, guys, where are the women? If you have a men working sign, shouldn't there be a women working sign as well? Now, she also posted to her Twitter account the alleged exchange between herself and one of the male construction workers on the site. And essentially, she was just grilling him, saying, where are the female workers? If you have a man working sign, shouldn't there be female representation? Yada, yada, yada. We've heard this story so many times before, but essentially the gist of what she was getting at, and I did some research into her, is she's a professor that likes to dismantle toxic masculinity. And of course, toxic masculinity, one of the radical left's favorite buzzwords. Now, essentially, what they use toxic masculinity to mean is that a man's innate masculinity or their masculine characteristics are in some way harmful to society, and in fact harmful to men themselves, but especially to women, of course, as always, right? But anyways, I came across an interesting Brown's University article where they're taking this concept of toxic masculinity and pushing it to extremes. So they're actually making a course here, and I'll flash it up on the screen now, all about how to unlearn toxic masculinity. Now, on this actual page from Brown University, you can see a number of other quite interesting categories here. For one, they have sexual assault and dating violence. So you can look at consent, you can look at predatory drugs, you can look at a number of other things, all of which are geared at shaming men for the actions of a few unsavory individuals in our population. But anyways, those are all great topics for another video, but today we're going to be talking about toxic masculinity, and let's see what Brown University has to say. I'm sure it's very insightful. So they start off, rigid definitions of masculinity are toxic to men's health. Quite a bold statement. Even the World Health Organization, the WHO, has recognized that men's tendency to die at younger ages may be correlated to the harmful ways that masculinity manifests itself in society, is what they're saying, right? But, you know, and I've talked about this before, you can make any statistic or you can make anything support your argument if you muddle the numbers and the statistics. You can completely change reality to conform to your agenda, and that's what they're doing here. So they say, in 2000, the World Health Organization acknowledged the need to pay greater attention to the shorter life expectancy of men and identified a lack of understanding of the role of masculinity in shaping men's expectations and behaviors as a primary causative factor for the health disparity between men and women. And it continues, and then it kind of gets a little bit sappy. Now, I've actually had a number of people comment on my videos. I've had some people email me that at certain universities, they're actually doing stuff now. They're doing certain initiatives where they are encouraging men to go into these rooms or go to these seminars and essentially open up about their feelings and tell the class or the participating people in the group how they feel, right? The whole idea behind them, apparently, is to help men shed these, what they call, repressive ideas about masculinity and embrace more feminine and gentle emotions and more gentle tendencies. So they say that men don't have a lot of spaces to have open and honest conversations about the different things that they are dealing with, like how they grapple with emotions or deal with conflict. Be Well is investing in creative safe spaces for men to unpack all of the things that they have learned about masculinity and what it means to be a man. The goal is to help those socialized as men to unlearn some of the notions that have led to such profound harm being enacted towards others and towards themselves. And so, as part of this program to relearn toxic masculinity, or unlearn toxic masculinity rather, they have two things here. Masculinity 101, a weekly discussion group for students to unpack and unlearn toxic masculine norms, and Conversations on Masculinity, a video compilation of interviews with students about masculinity. So again, all these things geared at creating effeminate men, men that are in touch with their feminine side, I suppose, which of course is something that I advocate against. I've said a million times, if you're a man, embrace being a man, be a masculine man. Don't buy into this absolute crap, which is what it is. Anyways, guys, here is a Fox News clip about this initiative, and they talk about it as well. Let me know what you think about this clip in the comment section. Like this video, share it with as many people as you can. As always, I will see you in the next one.
It's the phrase you hear these days from dopes pretending to be smart: toxic masculinity. The gist, masculinity is poison. Forget the great achievements that took great risk on the part of men and even resulted in their deaths. Nope, men are violent, sex-mad animals. And so Brown University offers a course aimed at unlearning toxic masculinity. We used to call this basket weaving 101. If you're willing to give Brown 50 grand for this crap, you need to unlearn common sense too. Besides, it makes no sense. I mean, if men are so toxic, why would you want them detoxing on your campus? My prediction, unlearning toxic masculinity will soon be replacing Western Civ. After all, there's no question men are more aggressive than women. It's science. And it doesn't hurt to civilize unruly cats. It's what dads and moms used to do before we decided they sucked. And men do live shorter lives. Just look at me. But mainly because of the risks taken to attract and protect the people we love. But if you believe this is about appreciating men while trimming away the rough parts, you kid yourself. This is pure class hatred based on stereotypes meant to demean a group of people. It's the branding of a gender by angry, bitter radicals. It's also sexist. If you don't believe me, just create your own class for Brown and call it Unlearning Toxic Femininity. How long do you think that'll last? Well, then again, maybe it's in the works already, designed to focus on those horrible, toxic stay-at-home moms who voted for Trump.
So I thought that was well done by Voltaire. And both Voltaire and A Blue Collar Logic, they're American-based, and they're really quite good at covering things that are happening in the United States. They talk about the social issues and things like that. I think that they're fast becoming my two favorite channels, as it were. So I strongly do encourage you to visit their YouTube websites. The links are right there in the show notes. But I think it's time to start winding this bad baby down and see what we've... let me see. I think I got through everything. Do I have any other notes here that I jotted down that I might find of interest? No, Justin Trudeau spending more money. Let me see. Going down the list. No, Justin Trudeau spending more money on foreign aid. What else do we got? Oh. Justin Trudeau spending more money on North American Indians. That's about it. That's the day in the week of Justin Trudeau. Remember to say no to Justin Trudeau. Don't forget, not only does he hate Canada, but he hates the United States too. He certainly has no love for that fine man, President Trump, in the White House. So you have no use for him. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you to Gary Comfort, my comfort blanket, Duck and Dive, my little duck, and Chief, a huge thank you, Chief, for that article. That was just a top drawer. Boy, that was fantastic. And to Vorpalbite the Shark, and Don't Mess with Vorp. And Vorp, I've got your song, by the way. Don't mess with Vorp, because he is a shark, and you know. When Vorp says that he's going to do something, you can trust him. He means it. This guy is certainly not all talk. This guy puts his money where his mouth is. And if I'm ever in trouble, I want Vorp in front of me. I also want to thank John Doe and Moving Forward, who got here. For listening in the studio. And I think that might be Brian listening as well. 619. But that's it. I will see you on Monday for another fun-filled edition of RFB Radio. You guys take care. Closing out. Thank you.